Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know? Like, he sort of feels me out, I feel him out, and we go for it.
Hello and welcome to The Worst Idea of All Time, Season 4. Promises made, promises unmade. Guy Montgomery, you're joining me from New York City. We swore to never do this format again. How are you?
Yeah, good. Look, I believe the turn of phrase is promises broken. And I don't know who to be upset for at this broken promise, whether it's one another, ourselves, or for you, anyone listening along. It fills my heart with dread and glee to tell you that Tim Batt and myself have both just sat down and poured.
Well, hold on. Before we get into the film, I want to put it on the record, first episode. It's been a long time between drinks. I think we've been off format for not quite a year, but sort of heading up to, I would say, 9 months or so. Does that sound about right?
That sounds about right.
I was very pumped about jumping back in the pool with you, big boy, but I kind of forgot the fact that we are separated by a great distance, and I think it's really going to change the complexion of a whole season. God have mercy on us. We will attempt to get through a whole 52 episodes of this. And after one watch, I was not in a good zone. And I actually woke up this morning with stomach cramps and thought I was going to vomit, which I can only associate with getting back into the Worst Idea viewings.
It's actually called getting back into Worst Idea shape. And I understand you also have a physio appointment not long after this for a runner's knee. So who's to say what's attributable to your, you know, rigorous exercise regimen and what's attributable to the specter of 52 weeks of this? Now, obviously, I was building up to saying something. We've danced around it. But what I want you all to know is Tim Batt and I both just sat down and pored over the 2-hour and 30-minute body of work that comprises Michael Patrick King's original love letter to the movie format with the characters made so popular by the HBO series. Tim Batt and myself have just watched Sex and the City. Open parenthesis one, I guess, close parenthesis, or open parenthesis film, close parenthesis.
Yeah, the movie is how I've seen it being depicted online. 2008? Am I right in saying that?
You are right in saying that. I was but 2 years out of high school. I was a second year university student at Victoria University of Wellington. I was living in Torrens Terrace, a very run down block of flats at the top of Cuba Street, part of town, or specifically that building known for its partying antics. And boy, did I party. Tim, where were you?
Funnily enough, I might have been... Oh, no, at that point I had moved, but I used to live just around the corner from you in the QBA apartments, which are at the top of Cuba, which were kind of the nice version of the ones you were living at. I went to a party or two in your building, though, you better believe.
Oh, lardy fucking da, mate!
Just above the Hell Pizza there, guy. Used to wander down in my dressing gown with my millions of dollars, for I was a 20-year-old with a full-time job.
I can only imagine.
Get my chicken tenders.
I remember going to a party in that building and thinking, oh, wow, so this is how the other half live. So my congratulations to that former version of yourself. Look, first things first, Tim. Obviously, yeah. It's an interesting order to watch the movies, any sort of movies in. Knowing what we know about how things unfold in the second movie, it's almost like... It's really interesting. I felt like it was sort of like we'd sort of tried to build the middle of a jigsaw puzzle, but we hadn't done the border yet. And this is like watching someone assemble the border.
Yeah, very much so. What I liked is that they put a bridge at the start between the series as a refresher. It was like a previously on Sex and the City to bring you right back up to speed, just to help out all the people who had wandered into the cinema not aware of the franchise or what the characters have been through.
I'll tell you who those people were, Tim. Those were partners. Those were boyfriends and husbands.
That's what I suspected as well. So it really brought you back up to speed with all of the journeys and the arcs. But it was also there was a bit of a distance between the end of the TV series and the first movie, right?
Look, while I feel like we've filled out the jigsaw as far as it can go, I have been made aware that this was a substantially popular television program before either of those movies. It's impossible for me to know what we've missed between the end of the series and the start of the movie, but I loved it. It just starts at such a clip. They go, bang, 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 bang. Here are the four primary characters you need to concern yourself with. Here's the format. Here's how we're dealing with it. Let's make a fucking movie.
But then true to form, boy, the brakes come on hard and they don't stay off. It is a movie stuck in second gear with also the handbrake firmly pointing to the sun.
Oh, my friend, we could not be coming at this from more different angles. 2.5 hours is long for any film, but I would describe what I just watched as a romp. We had, as opposed to what we had in Sex and the City 2, 3.5 almost storylines crammed into the film, as opposed to the zero that the sequel tallied. Look, I enjoyed it all. Like, I enjoyed this film all the way up to... I don't think it's a spoiler to talk about the plot line of a movie that was released 10 years ago, Big and Carrie's reunion when they are in the wardrobe at the apartment that they've sold, the glitzy penthouse. All the way up until then, I was like, hey, we're having fun. This is all right. And then when I saw them get back together and I considered I'd have to watch the mess they create for themselves before patching it up again and again and again, I was smiling along. I laughed aloud. A few times. There's one I can specifically remember. I mean, I don't live in fear of this yet. Let's enjoy ourselves. The movie will never look better.
Sweet, ignorant guy. I really wish I had brought your attitude to my watch, and it could have been colored by the fact that I put it off as long as possible. This is a 2.5 hour movie, and I ended up starting the watch at 11 p.m. last night. And then I was anticipating breaking it into two bite-sized pieces, so I'd wake up early and finish the second half, but I was like, oh, fuck it, I'll just watch the whole thing now, and then I can sort of sleep in. And I can't tell you how many times I kept looking at how long there was to go and just being shocked to see a time code of 1 hour and 40 minutes left. I was just like, are you kidding me, man?
Man, this is you call me sweet ignorant guy. You're sweet ignorant Tim. Watching it for the first time, knowing it clocks in at a girthy 2.5 hours at 11 p.m.
Oh, there's girth, isn't
on
there?
A school night. I mean, that is tantamount to self-harm, Tim. That is like, you know you got to hit this in the daytime. Even splitting it would have been a nice idea. No one enjoys watching a movie they don't want to when they're feeling tired. I'm just thinking of you up and alone at 12:30 a.m. on a Thursday morning, trudging through the remaining hour of this film. Of course you didn't enjoy yourself.
Do you know what's going to happen as well? This is a foregone conclusion, a true inevitability. This will be, I think, the shape of a lot of watches, because the time zone variable that we've thrown into the mix here is not insignificant. We're sort of at very awkward opposite ends of the day, and I do like to watch the movie as close as I can to a record just to get a fresh perspective to pour into the microphone. I look, my kingdom for your enthusiasm for that first watch, Guy, truly. I wish I had it. But I don't think I could even muster it if I sort of made the decision to get positive about this thing.
Okay.
Because it was hard. It's hard work.
Yeah, yeah.
It's hard work.
Before you launch into your various problems with the film, and I'm not over here telling you that we just watched a perfect bit of cinema, I would love to just try and milk some positivity out of you while I may, if you could share your shining light for this, the first screening of Sex and the City.
Oh, wow. Shining light. I'm going to paint with a really broad brush this episode and say, just like Samantha, everyone else has got their shitty little problems, and Samantha is just this perpetual beam of light shining through. She seems to be the only real character, you know? She's had an actual problem. She had to get chemo, which they talk about. And now she's just loving life. I feel like it colours her whole character in a really positive way. She out to fuck, and she don't mind who knows it. And she's struggling to consolidate that with her relationship to Smith Garrett, which we really get to see the contours of in this movie. I don't want to put carts before horses, but I've got a very bad memory. How the fuck did... I don't understand how the ending of this film with the Smith-Garrett relationship connects to the second film.
Because it ends on good terms. It's quite an amicable, a conscious uncoupling, in the great words of health and well-being guru Gwyneth Paltrow. I feel like they end on decent terms, and accordingly, you know, Samantha's not ending it because she wants a relationship with someone else. She's ending it because all she really wants is a relationship with herself. Doesn't mean her and Smith Garrett can't link up in fucking Tallahassee and bump uglies every now and then.
Gotcha. Or the Middle East, as the case may be. So there is all of this to say, I've forgotten what the line is, Guy. Truly, there was a line that I really loved delivered by Samantha. I can't remember what it was.
Can I guess what it is?
Yeah, yeah, go for it. I'd love it.
As an experimentation in our synchronicity.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
Carrie's been jilted. The four friends decide to go on the honeymoon together by way of solidarity to support, I mean, what is understandably an absolutely devastated Carrie Bradshaw. They look around the... It's reminiscent of when they arrive at the Opulent Hotel in Sex and the City 2, only they're looking at sort of the condo or bungalow wherein Big and Carrie would spend their honeymoon. A beautiful view of an azure ocean across a balcony. Like undeniably beautiful, and Samantha says to herself, "This will kill her."
Ah, good, but not it.
Oh man, that line was the biggest laugh I had. I was like, "That was when I shared a comic sensibility to the syllable with one of the characters," because it's true. You know, saying it doesn't mean that it devalues it. It was funny. I could feel the bond of friendship between them. But I mean, you know, like I was really in the movie at that point.
That's great, man. I'm so happy for you. This is like the start of an exciting relationship that I know is going to go south at some point. But like you're having a good time with this movie. And I love that.
Yeah. So you don't remember the Samantha line, but Samantha's general presence was your shining light.
I'm going to go with that this time. Yeah, I can't remember the line. I will get it in subsequent watches. I'll tell you that for free. What was your shining light, Guy?
Just like to say, dire straits for your prospects if you're one of your highlight from the first.
Mate, this is what happens when you're forced to watch a film in the middle of the night. Your brain gets scrambled. It's all jumbled up.
The entirety of someone's character. Well, mine was going to be the line I just shared, but I enjoyed the movie to such an extent that you need not worry. There's plenty more. I enjoyed the curtains drawn, lights up, no holds barred approach to sort of the raunchiness of the film, something that was sorely lacking in its sequel, was just how out and out horny these motherfuckers are. You know, you've got, I'm specifically right now thinking of Dante's dick, or Dante's peak, if you will. Samantha accidentally stumbles into her sexed up neighbor. And this is the guy who's causing sort of the bulk of her consternation about being in a relationship, is that she sort of regards her neighbor in Los Angeles as the male equivalent of her, a different lady every night. He fucks just unrelentingly. I don't know what this guy does for work. All he appears to do is have sex with a beautiful woman. And this really turns Samantha on. And yeah, and the
he
ocean, does, that's true.
He has sex with the ocean on top of surfboard often.
That's right. If you want to fuck the ocean, take up surfing. But so she got, and she, her little dog that she buys, who's also a representation of her horniness because it's been neutered, but it humps everything in sight, runs up onto this Dante enjoying an outdoor shower. And this is not long after we've seen, I believe it's not long after, or like, I mean, on top of this, by way of raunchiness, we've got two pretty powerful sex scenes between Steve and Miranda. You know, we've got... It just feels like it's having more fun. It's more confident in itself than the second film, which is such a weird comparison point. And I think that might be part of why I enjoyed it, is because I am drawing a very direct line between the two. But when we saw the penis, I mean, I feel like there must have been a conversation around that, because it's not, you know, like at the time of release back in 2008. But I was like, wow, we're really out here. I loved it. I loved Dante's peak.
We didn't see a ton of Dante's peak, though. It was a titillating view of it. There was it came on screen. We saw it. It was a co-star. Chuck her in the credits. Right under whatever the real guy's name is. We'll find that out later. Many opportunities. But Dante's peak made just a tantalizing sort of... It was a side boob equivalent, but for dick. A little side dick, I thought.
And I feel like that's part of what I loved about it. It was tantalizing. It was like, oh. And also, I mean, we didn't get a lot of it, but what I did see, it looked post-ejaculate to me, which sort of ups the raunchiness again. I mean, I don't know a lot about penis size, but the guy looked weighty, man, you know?
Well, if you're going to be casting for that role, I think he's got 2.5 lines in the entire film. You're going to want to see the penis in the casting room, you know? You're going to want to see what you're dealing with. This is going to be a centerpiece for the film. People are going to talk about Dante's Peak. Someone may make a podcast about it decades from release. You're going to want to get that knob right.
That's right. It felt like the movie was having fun with itself. And that was sort of it was a treat.
On the exposure of bodies front as well, weirdly, so what I kept thinking about in this movie was Sarah Jessica Parker's fingerprints are all over it. The entire thing was so constructed to put her in the best light possible and sort of to have as few things like sticky points of actual conflict that would travel with her outside of the film as possible. I'll try and dig into what I'm talking about here. I'm pretty sure we definitely see Cynthia Nixon's naked breasts as she's having passionate lovemaking session with the mayor of New York, Steve. And we also, I think, see Charlotte's breasts at one point, but I can't remember when. Is that right?
I'm with you. I mean, hazy memory of it's there, but I also don't remember.
I've got a sense... It's in there somewhere. Sarah Jessica Parker, we don't see any of that stuff. And there's even an exchange where they're talking about, in their respective relationships, how much sex they all have on the regular. Miranda hasn't had sex in 6 months inside of her marriage, you see, which is creating some issues. Charlotte announces that she has sex 2 to 3 times a week with Runkle, and talk about a shining light. Could not express my joy at seeing the Runkle Crunkle back on what was originally a big screen, but for me, quite a small screen in the middle of the night in New Zealand in my bed. It was something special.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
And Samantha announces that she has sex all the time, loves sex, can't get enough of it. And Sarah Jessica Parker, Carrie Bradshaw, refuses to partake in the conversation whatsoever. They ask her, they try to elicit how many times she has sex from her. These are inextricably linked women who have been spiritual besties for eons, and she will not share with the group after they have laid their sexual souls bare.
That's
how
right,
much
you...
intercourse the woman is getting.
Do you know, Tim, she says something which to me was almost more personal, like to the point of line crossing. Says something even more salacious and like just dripping in the filthiest fucking cummy innuendo. She says, like by way of sort of a winking confessional, when big colours...
Well, explain the metaphor though.
Oh, yeah, that's sorry, that's
Lily
right.
is there.
Yeah, yeah. So they're not allowed to say the word sex because Lily and Runkle's beautiful daughter, adopted daughter Lily, is there. I say adopted because it was nice to see that part of the storyline. I mean, because Charlotte's storyline is essentially, you know, her looming and eventual pregnancy and birth. Holy shit, this movie spanned some time.
There's a lot of stuff. I don't want to blow up your spot, but you did accidentally just say it was Lily's daughter, Lily. This isn't a... one of those awful situations of Hollywood directors sort of, you know, having it off with the stepchild or anything like that. It's Charlotte and Runkle's daughter, Lily.
Yeah. I apologize. They changed the word to coloring. So, because she's coloring in, so they use that as a metaphor. So when they're talking about coloring, they're actually talking about intercourse. And so this conversation plays out. Carrie, as Tim has detailed, refuses to divulge how often her and Big have sex. Creating more intrigue, not just for the friends, but also the viewers. And then sort of as a compromise or like, you know, some sort of consolation prize, she says, I won't say blah, 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 but when Big colours, he really stays inside the lines. And it's meant to be this sort of pithy throwaway one-liner that answers all without saying anything. But it just throws up all sorts of disgusting scenarios in my mind where I'm like, well, what constitutes colouring outside the lines?
I mean, come everywhere. Let's not beat around the bush. The guy has got ejaculate everywhere. And it'll be a mess. An absolute mess. Have some consideration, Big. Now, can we talk about Big in this film? Guy Montgomery. New York City's favorite financier. What a fuck.
He's such a sad sack in this movie. And like,
he is.
Some of the suits he wears, I know that fashion doesn't age, but there's a particular suit he wears when they're first inspecting the fancy penthouse apartment that is purportedly beyond their means until Big says, I've got this. But he's wearing this suit while they're looking in the tiny little wardrobe. I mean, it is... Just it's baggy, too baggy through the legs, but also like tapered, like short leg to the point of, we used to call them hover pants in intermediate and like middle school, so that we could taunt anyone who didn't wear pants that were long enough for their legs. The guy's wearing fucking like, I don't know, straight leg,
like three-quarter pants. I didn't notice.
Yeah,
this.
Like straight leg capris. I mean, they're they're baggy in all the wrong spots. I was frankly disgusted. And there is a parade of other questionable fashion, you know, on display by so many characters. And they're like, is it? I don't know what was going on in Chris Noth's personal life at the time of shooting, but he did not have his shit together at all.
This is coming from a man who regularly revels in the absurdity and obnoxiousness of his own dress. I mean, you wore a hat made of towel material in a color I can only describe as electric puke for ages. You love that
hat. I still
wear
it. Yeah, look, I mean...
And you're here giving shit to Chris Noth. Handsome man.
Time may not be kind to the hat. And I'm fully aware of
the
that. And I wear it secure in the knowledge. No one is kind to the hat. However, I persist. I feel like... I mean, maybe that was the style that Big was going for on that day, but it seems unlikely to me. It makes me uneasy to think of this man who's holding this. He wears suits every day. He must have a wardrobe full of suits. Like, it's just, there are so many things about it that ring. It bothered me so much. The other thing I thought about with Big is like, this is a guy with no mates. You don't see a suit. Yeah. The only person who's introduced as being close to Big's friend is the arsehole at the rehearsal dinner who sort of keeps interjecting and sort of throwing shade on the fact that Big's been married before. He doesn't have any friends. I mean, for me, the Big and Big stands for Big Suit and Big Red Flag. And I'm proven right and will be time and again.
That's his boss, right? That guy is talking shit about him.
I think he's just some arsehole who Big's still friends with because he can't shake him off.
I think he's a partner at the firm. I think that's a higher up for Big. And that's the thing. This is someone who he brought to the rehearsal dinner. Like, he clearly doesn't have any mates because he's packing it out with colleagues. It is kind of sad, but I think that's a thing that can happen to older men. They lose their friends and stuff. But Big's, as you say, he's a real sad sack in this film. Spoiler alert, and there's going to be a bit of that. They're going to get married. They kind of have this trip over a proposal style situation. The movie kind of opens with them discovering this incredible penthouse apartment, which I can only imagine the gall with which an audience was willing to accept this in the midst of a financial crisis orchestrated by New York real estate realtors selling oversized, bundling up mortgages and selling them for more than they were worth. This must have left a very metallic taste in the audience's mouth.
Absolutely. That's the sort of thing I almost want to trace back to the series, because I feel like the characters probably became successful over the course of the HBO show, which sort of doesn't necessarily earn them the right, but explains away some of the tone-deaf extravagance.
I guess
people want to see these characters who they love so dearly living their best lives on screen. But, I mean, I couldn't agree more. Maybe Carrie Bradshaw's sense of humor isn't for me, but like when they go and they see the wardrobe and they're saying, "How can anyone get a divorce in a place like this?" You know, when they're being shown around, then Carrie opens the wardrobe and she says, "Well, now it's a small little closet," and she says, "Well, now I understand the divorce."
Because it's too small.
Yeah,
the walk-in
yeah.
closet is too small in its original state.
That's right. That line felt laboured. I don't know. It's petty. I mean, this is the sort of complaint I should be reserving for ways down the track. But you sound like you've got stuff to say about Big. What did you make of him in this film?
Well, Big. We'll get back to Big in a second. But you've kind of you dragged me into a thing which kept coming back to me through this film, and call me a fucking lefto pinky communist if you must, podcast listener. But holy shit, every problem in this film is attempted to be solved with buying some stuff. I mean, doesn't matter what's going on, money is the solution. And again, like, the timing of this film just couldn't have been more awkward, I imagine, when it got released. People were losing their bloody 401ks, you know? Retirement funds were being pissed away because of the irresponsible actions of people like Big. And we're supposed to enjoy these women who on a whim are off on shopping trips buying up Versace and Gucci goods? My word. Anyway, as you say, they probably earned it through the course of the series and the fans that they had, pulled through over the years on the HBO show, which, you know, credit where it's due, was groundbreaking. Big in this movie sort of starts as a highfalutin banker type who is kind of a suave, smooth-talking guy. Finally, he and Carrie together.
I will not give That's you great. Suave on account of the suits.
They try to sort of present him as suave, I think. Would you
well, I'll tell you who didn't
that?
Try to present him as suave.
Who?
The wardrobe department. That suit is a goddamn war crime.
So then he kind of transitions from that to emotionally defunct man-child when he can't quite navigate the proper pathways of getting this wedding together with Carrie after they agree to get married because Carrie's insecure about him owning the entire apartment. So they decide a wedding, marriage. What better reason for marriage could there be than shared real estate legalese? And so they pursue that avenue. And then he freaks out because this is his third marriage and leaves her at the altar. And then for the about half of the movie, he's just kind of this sad ghost lingering in corners, trying to chase her down to apologize and win her back.
He is a bit of a sad ghost, but I mean you are right that because as the movie was ripping along towards this wedding, I was thinking, I was like, God, everything's happening so quickly here. How's this going to last 2.5 hours? Because within the first hour, there's already so much going on. You know, you've got the wedding,
right.
You've got the proposal, the planning, and then the absence of the wedding. You've got Miranda and Steve's relationship being torn asunder by his infidelity because she's too busy at work to satisfy what he needs sexually. You've got Samantha perving. I mean, what she's doing seems incredibly illegal. Literally just like by day and night watching her neighbor Dante fuck up a souffle. I was going to say storm, but I wanted to say souffle. And then you've got Charlotte, who's not really given a storyline till later in the film. But it's like it feels like it picks up where the show leaves off, again, having not really seen it. But like it feels like it's true to the show. It feels like there's somewhat even distribution amongst the characters. And it's things are really humming along. And I'm like, oh, wow. And then, I mean, the second act, you do get stuck a bit just in the, you know, the... And I guess that's part of the story. But Carrie's obviously heartbroken, wandering around New York City, in Mexico first. But... like Big is reduced to a ghost, but would you disagree that I mean that I think that's part of what's got me excited is it's like they've written storylines for the other characters. Sex and the City 2, Carrie's storyline didn't warrant a film, and they didn't attend to anyone else's wants or needs. So it was just this 2.5 hour fucking dehydration marathon in the desert.
You're right, man. You're so right. You're so right, and I'm so worried about me and both of us because I didn't enjoy it on the first watch, and that was my one shot. I'm fucking blowing it. I am Mr. Big at the altar, you know. Everything was laid out for me. We had a wonderful wedding with great people, invited all our favorites along, and I couldn't even fucking man up and enjoy that. What hope is there for the rest of this relationship?
Look, I'm man, nervous. You know how things are. This is like any relationship. There's ups and downs. There's compromise. Not every day is perfect. I feel like an apt metaphor is actually drawn from the film when Samantha is reckoning with the fact that she's not happy in a relationship and she has to break up with Smith Jarrett. And she says, they ask her, are you happy? And, she says she hasn't been happy for 5 years. And then, you know, she's sort of pontificating that maybe that's what relationships are, is that you don't get to be happy. And they ask Charlotte, and she says, I'm happy every day. Not all day, every day, but every day. And I feel like Charlotte, and let me tell you, you horny little scamp, you sound like you're being a real Samantha.
Who are you talking to? Who, me?
Yeah, you're not happy in this bed that we've literally just made for us to climb into.
Yeah, you're right. Here I am buying tickets to film festival movies, going around cheating on this one true franchise that I'm tethered to for a long time. I like to dabble. What can I say? I enjoy cinema. But it just makes me worried for the rest of the trajectory. But you know what? Upon reflection, maybe the context of watching this in the middle of the night wasn't the smartest viewing choice on my behalf, and maybe I've unfairly coloured the film based on that. But whatever's happened, I didn't have a stupendous time, and it is still 2.5 hours. And you got to admit, that's a whole lot of the girls.
Oh, man, 2.5 hours is... It's long.
Tried in the second movie to best it just for the sake of it, because it's only, I think, a few minutes longer than this one. It's like, oh, you thought the last one was long, huh? Huh? Watch this. No plot longer.
I'm inclined to agree. I don't think this will ever feel as long as that movie because of the action. Because there's storylines to follow and people to root for. But I mean, certainly, as I've said before, that reunion between Carrie and Big in the refurbished wardrobe at the penthouse apartment they've bought and sold over the course of the movie. That is some. That did put the fear of God in me.
What did? What aspect of that put the fear of God in you?
Just like, I know that diehard fans of the show are frustrated that they wind up together. And that's how I felt as a non-diehard fan of the show at the end of this movie.
It didn't, because Big, there's no, as much as Carrie's not a great character in this film, like I don't like her, she deserves better than Big. So now I've got the two leading stars of this film, neither of whom I'm rooting for, and I'm supposed to be rooting for their relationship together, and I'm not, and then they get together at the end, it's like, oh, fuck.
But
could we,
like,
just,
I mean,
chase down Miranda bloody being a peeping Tom for long? Could we spin a movie out of that? Could we just follow for 2.5 hours the adventures of Samantha, who finally has a sort of another sexual awakening at age 50 and realizes that what she really loves, what she undeniably can't get enough of, is not just herself having sex, but it is her secretly watching others have sex. And her pursuits through this illegal trajectory of trying to chase down open windows and parted curtains to see coitus in the act, strangers going at it animalistically to satiate her own needs, awakened newly in this film.
Yeah, I agree. Also, and I mean, even in simpler terms, even the split and reunion of Miranda and Steve, I felt so much more deeply. I was much more invested in, you know, like the fucking Big and Carrie, all the shit that comes up between them. It's so heady. It's like, it's all just miscommunicate. It's two people who aren't making sure they're on the same page every step of the way. He jilts her because she doesn't pick up her phone before the wedding. If you're that worried, bring one of her fucking mates, dickhead. You know,
man,
Miranda and
it's
Steve.
It's not like they've been best friends forever.
Yeah. Miranda and Steve, it's like the reason their relationship comes apart is born of something that you can kind of sink your teeth into. It's like people trying to balance responsibilities in life. And you like both of them, and you know they're a good match, and you want them to get back together. I got goosebumps when they reunited on Brooklyn Bridge. I took a photo of them. I'll send it to you.
Send it to all of us, Guy.
Yeah,
let's make that the image for the episode. So this
absolutely.
Is the picture that you can see as the thumbnail. That is a moment that captured Guy's heart.
I felt that.
Steve's so lovely. I'm sorry that he cheated on him on Marie. I was going to call her Amanda.
Well,
boy,
I tell you,
it's been a while since Sex and the City 2.
Yeah, I tell you, you might be sorry, but no one is as sorry by that misstep in the relationship as the residents of New York City. I put it to you, Timothy Andrew Batt, that the beginning of Brady's turn to the rats and thirst for supremacy is on account of the tumult of living through a trial separation between his two parents as a young boy.
You couldn't be more right. There is an undeniable connection between the tension which Brady feels, and he even, you can see him start to try to grab the reins of power at such a young age. On the eve of New Year's, a time known for smooching, he tries to get his parents to kiss because he's been taught the rules of New Year's. You say, Happy New Year, very loudly when the ball drops, and then you got to kiss someone. And so as Miranda's refreshing his memory on these steps, this protocol to usher in the new harvest, he says, Happy New Year. And she says, Great job. And then they do it together because they're doing the crossover bit where Steve's getting wardship over the young king. And he says, Now you guys kiss. You can see him even at such a young age. He must be no older than 3 in this movie. Try to exert power and put the pieces together. And what have we got now? We're living in a world where Cynthia Nixon's, you know, she's gotten thirsty for it. She's seen what Brady's done with the place. She was married on screen to the mayor of New York, and now she's wanting to grab the reins for real.
What a powerful trio. Well, I mean, what a family. Think about, you know, the hunger for power and, you know, the effective means of grabbing it that these people have. I agree. I think Brady's seen something broken that he wants to put back together. He feels like it's beyond his grasp or control. And so he swears to himself, come hell or high water, he's going to claw his way to the top and rebuild the relationship that fell apart, not because of him. I mean, no one would want to put that on a child, but certainly something that he is to a percentage point a part of.
Hmm. He just wants to start flexing those powerful muscles of his, and he doesn't quite know how to do it yet. Human manipulation skills, not great, but I tell you what, getting in charge of the rats, very, very exceptionally gifted at that. Before we sort of round off, Guy, we haven't spoken at all about Carrie's assistant, Louise, or St. Louise from St. Louis, as she's cheerfully referred to in the film. Great character, kind of loved her. Cool presence. She had this interesting sort of acting style of quite aloof, I would describe her as.
And very, very warm energy, though. That sort of that casual approach. Really, she really lights up the screen.
But didn't like throw. She didn't shove it down your throat. She was like, "I'm a charming character, and you will come to me." And I did. Really liked her. I was very disappointed to see her go, even though I knew that she wasn't in the second movie. I was like, "Oh, dang it." Of course.
Yeah.
She's in a lot of the movie, though, and I think the movie is all the better for it. She hooks up with her back with her boyfriend, which didn't seem like a great bit of writing to me, because it was sort of... All the men in this movie are not super perfect, but we only get referred to... What's his name? Phil or Will? His name's Will. He tells her that he loves her, but she's not the one. But then by the end of the film, they get back together, and that just feels like she should have traded up, you know, gotten some self-worth.
I don't know about that. I think it's played by Jennifer Hudson, who I can't remember. I think she was a singer. I can't remember if she was an actor or a singer first, but I feel like this role was part of her ascendancy in Hollywood. I mean, it seems absurd to call
her Hollywood. Is that Jennifer Hudson?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
Jesus Christ, I don't know anything about anything. I did not know that.
There was a certain part of her story. I mean, I also, obviously, we both knew she wasn't going to be in the second film, so in some way she was to be written out. There was an element of the sort of the magical, you know, like she's essentially brought in to fix up Carrie Bradshaw's life. And then once she's rebuilt her, she, you know, she magically disappears again. Not to say I didn't enjoy her while it was happening, but it did feel a little tropey to me.
I was just checking it was Jennifer Hudson. What felt tropey, sorry? Give me the short
version. Is it Jennifer Hudson?
I just tuned out while I was Googling. Yeah, it is, yeah.
Just like she's essentially brought into the film to rebuild Carrie Bradshaw. And then as soon as it works, you know, a fairy godmother type character, as soon as her work's done, she goes, oh, and I'm back to St. Louis. And you're like, okay.
Christ, you're right. I hadn't framed it quite so perfectly, but you're absolutely right. Little fairy godmother that comes in, fixes, and then fucks off. She should have stayed in New York. She should have taken over Carrie Bradshaw's empire. Carrie's on the wane.
Yeah, I mean, and we soon find that out. Look, I understand you've got an appointment to get to. We've been talking about this for a while. I mean, I still have reams of notes over here. So excited am I by the prospect of this film. But before we go,
let's get another watch in, like, ASAP. Let's get in the pool.
Couldn't agree more. I'd like to say, at the end of the movie, they wrap it up, as is their wont, with a beautiful bit of Carrie Bradshaw voiceover, where she sort of reflects upon the lessons learned and the experiences shared by her and her friends. The closing voiceover, it goes along the lines of, and there in the same city where they met as girls, four New York women were finally, and all I could think in my head, just on a loop, the words in my head were going over and over, going, grown ups, grown up, grown ups.
The circle of life is almost complete. Thank you for listening. Thank you to this episode's sponsor, Mr. Big's Big Old Pants. Classic suit can't be beat. This is true. Style never goes out of fashion. But what you may not know is that the modern gentleman needs the airflow and unpredictability of Mr. Big's Big Old Pants. Do you want to see some pant legs that don't quite hit the floor or even the top of your shoe? You need Mr. Big's Big Old Pants.
The make that I was specifically referring to from the range of Mr. Big's Big Old Pants, I believe, were called Caprizis. A capri pant with insulated pockets containing tin foil and cling wrap, so that you can put unwrapped cheeses, oils, tomatoes, and basil leaves in your pockets for daytime snacking. Tim, a pleasure. I hope you feel better. I hope your knee gets better. And I'll be talking to you very soon.
We just have a good rhythm together, you know. Like, he sort of feels me out, I feel him out. And we go for it.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.